On a cold February day in 1984, 5 months or so after the appearance of the bugs, Brian Cole stuck his head into the SC's office. Tony Shaindinks was in Scranton, trying to explain why he hadn't spent his entire budget appropriation for 1983. There was nothing like one or two scrimpy SCs to make everyone else look bad, and Sandy Dearborn was holding down the big chair. "Think you better take a little amble out to the back shed, boss," Brian said. "Code D. What kind of code D we talking about, Bri? Trunk's up. Are you sure it didn't just pop open? There haven't been any fireworks since just before Christmas. Usually there's fireworks, I know, but the temperature's been too low in there for the last week. Besides, I can see something." That got Sandy on his feet. He could feel the old dread stealing its fat fingers around his heart and starting to squeeze. Another mess to clean up, maybe. Probably. Please, God, don't let it be another fish, he thought. Nothing that has to be hosed out of there by men wearing masks. "Do you think it might be alive?" Sandy asked. He thought he sounded calm enough, but he did not feel particularly calm. "The thing you saw, does it look..." "It looks like some sort of uprooted plant," Brian said. "Part of it's hanging down over the back bumper. I'll tell you what, boss. It looks a little bit like an Easter lily. Have Matt call Curtis in off the road. His shift's almost over anyway." Kurt rogered the code D, told Matt he was out on Sawmill Road, and said he'd be back at base in 15 minutes. That gave Sandy time to get the coil of yellow rope out of the hutch and to have a good long look into Shed B with the pair of cheap, low-power binoculars that were also kept in the hutch. He agreed with Brian. The thing hanging out of the trunk, a draggled and membranous white shading to dark green, looked as much like an Easter lily as anything else. The kind you see about 5 days after the holiday, half past drooping and going on dead. Kurt showed up, parked sloppily in front of the gas pump, and came on the trot to where Sandy, Brian, Huddy, Archie Arcanian, and a few others were standing at the shed windows in those sidewalk superintendent poses. Sandy held the binoculars out and Kurt took them. He stood for nearly a full minute, at first making tiny adjustments to the focus knob, then just looking. "Well?" Sandy asked when he was finally finished. "I'm going in," Kurt replied, a response that didn't surprise Sandy in the slightest. Why else had he bothered to get the rope? "And if it doesn't rear up and try to bite me, I'll photograph it, video it, and bag it. Just give me 5 minutes to get ready." It didn't take him even that. He came out of the barracks wearing surgical gloves, what were already coming to be known in the PSP as AIDS mittens. A barber smock, rubber galoshes, and a bathing cap over his hair. Hung around his neck was a puff pack, a little plastic breathing mask with its own air supply that was good for about 5 minutes. In one of his gloved hands, he had a Polaroid camera. There was a green plastic garbage bag tucked into his belt. Huddy had unlimbered the video cam, and now he trained it on Kurt, who looked très fantastique as he strode manfully across the parking lot in his blue bathing cap and red galoshes, and even more so when Sandy had knotted the yellow rope around his middle. "You're beautiful," Huddy cried, peering through the video camera. "Wave to your adoring fans." Curtis Wilcox waved dutifully. Some of his fans would look at this tape in the days after his sudden death 17 years later, trying not to cry, even as they laughed at the foolish, amiable look of him. From the open dispatch window, Matt sang after him in a surprisingly strong tenor voice, "Hug me, you sexy thing. Kiss me, you sexy thing."